Today, we've got a very special guest, the true virtuoso of the pedal steel guitar, Robert Randolph. Known for his incredible mastery of the instrument and his ability to blend genres from gospel to rock, Robert has not only redefined the role of the pedal steel guitar in modern music, but has inspired countless musicians with his soulful, high-energy playing. As the frontman of Robert Randolph and the Family Band, he's taken the pedal steel out of the traditional country context and infused it with elements of funk, blues, and rock, creating a sound that is uniquely his own. He has collaborated and toured with the likes of Eric Clapton, Beyonce, Dave Matthews, Buddy Guy, Santana, Slash, Joe Bonamassa, John Mayer, our friends Stephen Kellogg and Richard Ahn of OAR, and many others. Whether you're a longtime fan or new to his music, get ready for an insightful conversation with one of the most innovative players in the world. Robert, welcome to Hear Us Out.
What's up? How you doing?
Doing all right. Why don't you tell us, what is it specifically that attracts you to the pedal steel?
It was the main instrument in my church that I grew up. You know, a lot of people don't realize it, but my church organization was an old Pentecostal church that goes back to the early 1920s, 30s. And it's sort of like the Buena Vista Social Club. It was this this old tradition that went all the way back. So that's where I learned how to play. I grew up watching all of those guys. And so it's really like a 100-year-old tradition. There was a guy named Willie Eason that went over, he fought in the war over in Hawaii and brought back this little lap steel in the late 1920s, I would say, and brought it back to our church when he came back. And so for my grandparents and parents and my whole life, the pedal steel, lap steel guitar has been sort of the main instrument in my church.
Given that it has its roots in country and even before that in Hawaii, how do you find your sound in so many different genres?
You know, it's kind of a mixture between, you know, just being inspired by like blues legends like Stevie Ray Vaughan and jazz legends like Wes Montgomery. And I kind of listen to a lot of different music to be able to kind of define the sound, as well as my pedal steel forefathers and people like that, you know, growing up watching them play. So it's really like that's what sort of defined me and sort of got me into trying the playing of Stevie Ray Vaughan got me into trying to play the pedal steel like a regular guitar, I would say.
Your musical style, it is so diverse and versatile. Do you find that your style has evolved over time? Is it due to collaborating with other artists that you've found a change in your style, or how have you found your music changing?
I would say it's been a sort of a combination of a lot of things, you know. First of all, being ADD, you know, because I really love all styles of music. You know, I'm not one of those guys that kind of just, you know, a lot of people think I grew up in a country somewhere. I like literally grew up in an inner city in Newark, New Jersey, and my whole entire life, and being inspired by all of those musicians. So we kind of grew up listening like gospel and funk, basically, right? Up until I was about 17, I had never really listened to anything else until I got that CD of Stevie Ray Vaughan, right? Because it was kind of like, you know, smooth jazz, CD 101.9, you know,
Jersey.
Yeah. Right. And it was just either funk, just because you knew some of the funk stuff. And then it was like hip hop and R&B, right? And then gospel. And so up until I got the tape of Stevie Ray Vaughan, and then when I first started playing, kind of, we had this thing called the Sacred Steel Convention when I was about 20 years old. It was the first one of all of ours, my church's sort of historical music. It was like the first thing, because the actual story of our church's music, which was coined as Sacred Steel, this guy named Bob Stone out of Florida found the music and decided to write a book on it and this 100-year-old tradition. So we had this thing called the Sacred Steel Convention, which I met this guy named Jim Markle, who then like brought me, we had this conversation, and then he started going off about all these different things. Next thing you know, he was like, hey, have you listened to this band? And have you heard of the Allman Brothers? Have you heard of this band and Zeppelin? I was like, what's all of that? You know?
So he opened your eyes.
Yeah. So when I got home about a month later, there's this whole box sitting on my porch about with all of this, you know, everything from the band to Zeppelin to Aerosmith, all this music I never listened to. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I just listened to that. It's kind of funny because a lot of those CDs, I found them. I was cleaning out my garage, you know, not too long ago. So. Mm-hmm.
A couple weeks ago, we had Brian Calhoun of Rockbridge Guitar on, and we were talking about all different customizations for acoustic guitars. Can you talk about some customizations that you look for in your pedal steel?
That's a funny question, because it's kind of listening to the sort of the country music guys and kind of doing all of that. It's like I listen to a lot of the country guys, and the way that a normal country pedal steel is played and tuned and set up, it's only really made to be playing country music. It's not mm-hmm. for any other style. So like, being that my church sort of invented these new tunings mm-hmm. and new ways to play, which is very much more bluesy and rock and roll, mm-hmm. but it still allowed you, the players, you know, to go down these different paths of playing a lot of the country and jazz licks on it. So I kind of like mix the two sides, country and then some of the ones that my forefathers in my church had tuned their guitars like. And I sort of came up with the actual 13-string pedal steel. And everybody's like, what's the 13th string? It's like, you know.
Yeah, because it's typically 12.
Well, that's the highest that they go. You mm-hmm. know, it's really normally 10, but there's a bunch of 12 strings out there. But yeah, so I like decided 13 was like the one. I'm like, give me this 13 string, you know.
That's you apart.
Yeah, that was who I am. What's the 13th string, you know? That's what it was for so many years. It was funny.
As Eric said in your intro, you've worked with so many artists. Has there ever been a collaboration that has been particularly awesome for you, where you said, I can't believe I'm here?
It's been so many of those opportunities. I think it's like the first time is like maybe, you know, playing on tour with Dave Matthews Band, or if you go back to like 2004, we played the Grammys, which was to me was like the most like you've arrived moment, because the whole world was like, who are these dudes? You know, it was like Outkast and George Clinton and us and, you know, and Earth, Wind and Fire, right? And it was like Robert Randolph, and it's like people are like, who the hell are these guys, you know? So that was sort of like the first moment, national television, the whole world saw it, and like ever since then everybody wanted to be your friend, you know.
Mm-hmm. How was that for you, being in that transition period of going from who are these people and now everybody knows your name?
You know, what's funny about the whole music career is like you kind of constantly on this roller coaster that kind of goes and goes, and you know, and when you sort of learn to like really accept that part, you really enjoy the actual ride of it, because there's so many, like I could probably sit here and name 100 different moments that when we're doing them at the time, right, they're all cool. Mm-hmm. And so each year it's like, man, I can't believe. Like, so it was funny, like this past summer, I got a chance to play with Bruce Springsteen for the first time. And we played at this bar, the Stone Pony in New Jersey. And it was like after a festival. For me, it was kind of like, okay, my life, my career has come full circle, because I mm-hmm. jammed with all the guys. I never jammed with the boss, the king of New Jersey. Where he started, in the club, after the show, you know, after a big festival where he was playing the next day, actual like 3 hours, right? So that we play, and it was only supposed to be like, hey, come sit in at the Stone Pony, and then maybe Bruce is going to come sit in like one song, to like playing like a whole hour long with Bruce, right? And it was like the whole... So it was kind of like, wow, man, that's the hell of a moment right there, you know.
It's right down the road from where we're at. Speaking to this idea of collaboration, so seeing you on stage with Eric Clapton, John Mayer, Sheryl Crow at the same time, how do you find space for yourself with all of these giants? And how do you do that when it's not people you play with consistently, to find space for you to do your thing, but also not step on their toes?
I think it's kind of funny, because I'm always stepping on somebody's toes when we're in, but it's kind of like, you kind of like do what you can do, you know. You kind of, for me, it's kind of like, you know, I'm playing a slide guitar, pedal steel guitar. So you kind of just get to get away with like doing doing whatever, you know, being who you are, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's like, there's so many great artists. And like when you, I mean, that's sort of one of the cool things about the whole journey of playing music. Cause it's like when you're young, you're trying to like, you know, everything's like, how do I be cool? Even though you're still being yourself and you're kind of like, why is this band more famous than me? And why is this person? Why is it? How come my song's not on the radio more? Right. To when you get older, you just really like look at the grand scope of things and you sort of see that, okay, this is who I am. This is why the people enjoy mm-hmm. coming. They love your sound and what we all contribute to the music industry. So I think it's really, for me, it's just more about being who you are, mm-hmm. right? And then watching others go like, okay, wow, I can't do that. Wow, that's great.
Is it ever a different experience for you if you're playing in venues across the country that you're more familiar with versus taking it outside internationally because you've been around?
No, but the funny part about it is it's really all the same, to be honest mm-hmm. with you. The wildest thing about playing music is like, music is really a universal language, regardless of who you are, right? That it's weird, the vibrations, the sounds, the melodies, it's a universal language. And and what really helped me understand that more, it's like recently I went to Cuba and I got a chance to talk to Taj Mahal, who's now like 80 something, right? He sort of spoke to that. And it's kind of funny because most artists, like I said, we go through these roller coasters and you kind of not sure, like, man, I'm going to Norway. Are they going to like this music? I'm going to, you know, Montreal. I'm going to go to Africa. And when you realize that all of these people around the planet Earth all bop to the same music. Music is just the weirdest thing, that it's a universal language. You go to places like Asia, like Japan and China and Tokyo, you know, Indonesia, where people don't speak a lick of English, but meanwhile they'll sing the words to your songs, right? So it's just the wildest thing. Yeah, I mean, you know, we all grew up watching like the videos of like Michael Jackson, right? And like, no matter where this guy was, people were crying and falling out and singing the lyrics, right? That's the first time the whole world actually seen something like that, right? Yep. It's like, and so people are like, when is Michael Jackson playing, you know, New York City? And it's like, you forget how big the world is. He's like, Michael Jackson's doing an Asian tour for the next 2 years, right? And it's because it's so large. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, you could literally do Asia for like a year and then go and do Europe for like a year. Right. And then, I mean, South America. Right. Like now, like, I follow bands like, you know, Red Hot Chili Peppers and Metallica and some of these bands. And like, they're all over South America and you're like, and they plant stadiums. Right?
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
And you forget, like, so it's just like the world is so big. Music is really like just this universal language that I think just sometimes as artists, we kind of get complacent, like, well, the next time I'm going back to Omaha, Nebraska, when am I going back to Denver? You know, I want to play Miami again. Meanwhile, you see some other band and like, they're like, oh, I'm in Tokyo again. I'm doing an Australian tour, and it's like, I'm doing a tour in South America. And you're like, damn, bro.
What's your favorite kind of venue to play at?
I would say the favorite kind would be, I like arenas, you know, if I'm opening for somebody, obviously, right? Because I can't play an arena by myself. But I would say an arena or a big club, somewhere like 1,000 or 1,500, right? Those, like, arena for big things. Right. And then clubs 1,000 to 1,500, because it's like, those all just sound bigger and allows you to play loud, because we play very loud, as you could see from my hearing tests, you know.
Yeah.
It's funny story, man. So I posted a thing on my story, and my old drummer is like, I got hearing aids now. And I'm like, what? You never told me that.
Yeah. They're so small. They're so discreet.
Are they really?
Yeah.
And then this morning somebody posted like, you should really think about getting hearing aids. It's going to make your life a lot better. Yo, I'm like, what does that mean? I'm like, I'm not wearing a freaking hearing aids like an old man. Like, what?
Ah, they're not just for old men.
But it's so funny because my drummer was like, yo, I got hearing aids, man, because of sitting behind your amp.
Been blasting them for all these years.
Because you're constantly exposed to loud music and noise, any steps you take to protect your hearing?
No, I just got lectured the other day by Eric, you know.
That's your first step.
Well, you see this here in the right ear? Right. This is how I would, you start out the show with two ears in, and then you always wind up taking out because for guitar players, right, the tone is never right with ears in. So you don't get like that ambience or the right guitar tone because, you know, it's just not the same sound. So all guitar players, right, they wear ears and then they take them out, take one out. Right. So when you do that for years and years, you wind up with
one side's down. Yeah. Well, hopefully the new monitors will be better.
Yeah. Yeah.
So talking about, again, the ideas of collaborations, this past year, you worked with Beyonce on her Grammy winning album. When she comes to you, is she looking for you to do something specific or for you to bring your style, whatever that might be for any given song, to her work?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, she was just like, just play. And then what was wild is I didn't even really know it was a country record. It was just like Beyonce, once she went to studio to perform, to do some stuff with her. And it was kind of like, I was like, well, hey, guys, what do I do? And it was like, just play. And I'm like, do play what? And I'm like, well, just play what you feel and see what you add. And it was like that, you know. I mean, I probably wind up had played on like five songs or something. And I think on a record it turned out to just be three. But I'm like, man, it would have been cool if y'all told me this was a country record. Then I would have kind of like not kind of like Hendrixed it all out or something, you know. But so that was like the key of it, you know, to kind of like just kind of see what, be able to really just be yourself, be myself and create, you know.
Is that a harder situation or is that easier because you just get to be?
I don't know, man. That's a good question because I really don't know. Sometimes you want to be who you are, but then it's kind of funny because you asked me another question earlier today about getting in a way. And it's like, if you don't tell me, I'll just think like it's my record. So I'm just going to play over everything, you know? I'm like, no, keep playing. Please. I play here too. I play there too.
When she says play what you feel, how much are you thinking while playing? Do you kind of just let go and see where it takes you? Or are you actively thinking, this is how I'm going to go about it?
Actively thinking, you know, because it's funny story because like, you know, I played on so many people's records, actually. Like, it's kind of wild. Like, I played on more people's records than probably my own music that I put out. And so you sort of learn because, like, Eric Clapton once said to me, he's like, what are you doing? And I was like, what? He's like, why are you playing all over my record? I was like, well, you got me here to play, man. What the hell are you talking about? You know? and then Paul Simon sort of said the same thing. He's like, wait, don't play there. Don't play here. Don't play there. And I'm like, well, what do you want me to do? It's like, I don't know. Just play what you feel. But like, here's what I feel. Well, you tell me don't play there. How am I supposed to know, man? You know? So it's so many different things, right? Mm-hmm. So I played in a studio. Like, wait, I've done a track with Ozzy Osbourne, right? You should look that up. That's pretty hilarious. That's like, and then I recorded that back in like 2005 or something. And like somebody during a pandemic had posted it. So I was like, I forgot about me and Ozzy in a studio in LA, you know? Yeah.
The way these like, things just come together.
Like, dang, 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 dang.
Going all out.
So you've had all these collaborations. Who's left on your bucket list? Who would you love to work with that maybe you haven't just had the chance to yet?
That's a good question. I would say between Stevie Wonder and Red Hot Chili Peppers, those two.
You never know. They could be listening to this podcast and they're next.
Listen, I'm going to make them listen to it because I'm going to wreck. I'm going to say, hey, you need to go see this ear doctor, man. You know,
there you
audiologist, go. Audiologist, you know, get. Who's that? Yeah. Okay.
We'll tag him in the post.
We love the shout out.
Yeah, tag him up, man. Say, hey, you got to get your ears checked out, man.
So one of my last questions for you, you've talked and I've seen a lot historically where you talk about the influence that your church had on you, the musicians, the community. Can you talk about where maybe you felt like you've gotten to influence people and maybe become a part of their story? That's something we've looked at in this podcast, is how we get to become a part of other people's stories, and maybe somewhere along the lines with your work and your music that you've been able to do that.
When I play, I wound up playing with the band Los Lobos, between Los Lobos and Carlos Santana, right? And collaborating with them, like that's that whole like Latin culture and that whole. And so between the two of them, you kind of like got injected into their whole culture, the whole like Mexico and the Latin, you know, and like because it was a lot of their like people and like charities that benefit a lot of those different cities and countries where they all relate to, right? Like when I say that, it's like, so like I have the Robert Randolph Foundation and my whole thing. It's like, oh, underprivileged kids here in the United States and blah, 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 and inner cities, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And so I kind of got injected to them and saw how like their music and their charities around their like philanthropist work around their culture is kind of works for their whole scene, right? And hanging out with like their friends and their family and having those people going like, oh man, we like how you, what you added to the show today with Santana or Los Lobos. So for me, that was kind of like really special and really cool, you know, to kind of to be a part of that.
2025 is just starting. My last question for you is, what are you excited? Any upcoming projects coming up this year that you're excited about?
Yes, I got my new Robert Randolph record coming out in May. It's going to be called Preacher Kids. You know, it's a very bluesy rock record of all of these different stories. I can pile of talking to enough artists, because it's funny, a lot of Black artists today, like we all sort of come from church, and it's kind of like we're all sort of like the prodigal sons and daughters, and we all have like these funny stories and things that we coming out, you know, into, if you go back in church and say you're going out into the world, you know. So we have that record coming out, and then I did another collaboration that's going to follow that up with a record that I did with G Love and Aloe Black that's gonna come out late 25. Awesome. So it's kind of gonna be like
big year.
Yeah, man, let's see what's going down.
Awesome. That's when I think I've heard of all the people you've worked with. There are more. There's always more.
It's always more. There's always more. I actually don't I stopped responding, you know, because I'm like, I gotta finish my own music.
There you go. So we see you a lot of times around Madison Square Garden. Are the Knicks ever going to win a championship in our lifetime?
I hope so, man. I think we were closer. I think we were closer last year than we were this year, than we are this year. It's kind of like last year. I think the team gelled at the right moment. We just had a bunch of injuries, but had they kept that team together, I think we had a better chance. Because now it's like you see all these pieces and like. Now it's like we're missing pieces instead of like we're ready. So I don't know. I think this year it's kind of going to be me being a fan, like number one Knicks fan. I think it's going to be early playoff exit.
Hopefully they can make a run. But
yeah, I'm more concerned about this team here because we suck.
Miracles can happen.
Yeah, yeah. The Giants season was painful.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, they gave away like three starters, Saquon, Xavier McKinney, you know, like, come on, man, what are we doing? Like, you gave away two Pro Bowlers.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely painful season.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing. And they kept Joe Shane. They should have fired him, man. It's unbelievable, man.
And now who knows what's going to happen with the draft coming up?
It's a disaster, bro. They don't know what they're doing. Trust me, I had enough.
we'll wait and see.
Before we let you go, tell us about back in the day, the gefilte fish diet.
Hey, I still do it sometimes. Yeah. Man, you know, yeah. It's a filter fish. It's funny because when we were on, sort of like when we were first on tour, you know, I probably had like, it's kind of funny because you had like, you know, four ghetto guys in a band. And then my whole crew was like four Jewish guys mm-hmm. and one Irish guy. Right. And so they would be like, they'd be like, my old manager, Gary, would be like, hey, man, I'm gonna eat this gefilte fish. And I was like, what is that? And so he would have it in the fridge when, like, you know, the early tour bus days when, mm-hmm. like, you know, you really just ate oodles and noodles or peanut butter jelly.
Ramen.
Yeah. So he had gefilte fish in there. And I was like, let me try this. So I like put gefilte fish, took it out the jar, put it on the bread and put some mayonnaise and hot sauce on it. I'm like, man, it's pretty good here, man. I'm like, this works. I can see it. I'm a tuna fish guy. I could be a gefilte fish guy and salmon and sardines guy too.
There you go.
Good so for you was, for keeping it up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's hey, listen, people be like, how do you eat that stuff? I'm like, man, listen, mayonnaise and hot sauce.
It was like a filter fish. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Awesome. Well, Robert, thank you so much for your time. Why don't you let everybody know where they can find you online and catch up with your music?
Yeah, find me on robertrandolph.net online or Robert Randolph on Instagram, Robert Randolph on Twitter. Go to Robert Randolph on Facebook and you'll see all of the information about the upcoming tour, the music, and so forth. So check it out. It's going to be a good time.
Awesome. And we'll link to that in the episode description. So
awesome.
Thank you so much for your time and sharing your stories with us and with our audience. And we look forward to catching you on the road.
Awesome. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Robert.
All right, Eric. Thank you, Michelle.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.